I get good pictures. Go ahead. Have fun.
Well, do you have questions or what do you want me to do? I don't know.
Anything. I'm putting that there as a backup.
Oh.
Can really just start anywhere. Like the. Where were you born? In Mass?
Okay. Yeah, yes. I was born in Cambridge, Mass. I don't know the name of the hospital, but it's probably changed. The name's probably changed. Back in the day where they kept women in the hospital for like a week, and my mother said she didn't remember any of it particularly.
Really?
She told me once, when I was having Linda, she said, "Oh, it just feels like you have to go to the bathroom," or something like that.
Oh,
I know. And then my parents at the time, I know when I was born, they bought the house that I grew up in on 98 Annamon, the one I told you to look at.
Yeah.
Google it, the one that's worth $1 million now. Anyway, I don't know whether I was born and then they moved, or whether they just brought me home there. I don't know that part either. But because they were living in an apartment before that.
Was that the Robin house?
Yep.
Am I saying that right?
Yep. The one you remember with the wainscoting.
Yeah, I remember the stairs and the wainscoting.
Yep.
Dark wood.
Yep.
And kind of wood tables with drawers that are in the, like a living room to the right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. That's right. Naughty Pine.
Pretty small.
Yeah.
Pretty young back then.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then I lived in that house till I went away to college.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
And my father used to go up, up our street to the square where, the city of Newton is, I think there's 13 different villages that have their own, stores and stuff like that. So, and the train station. So we used to take the train to work every day.
He worked in Boston?
Yeah.
Is that the
John Hancock?
Yeah.
And then he'd come home, come home on train too, and then, walk down. It was maybe a quarter of a mile, not even, I don't know.
Wow.
And then we ate promptly at 6 o'clock every night. he's like you see in the movies, all the men taking the commuter train, reading their paper and all that stuff. He always had the paper with him.
So you were born in 38?
Yeah. Yeah, wow, I know.
So that, I'm trying to think of the world at that point.
Well, that's World War II. I remember World War II.
Was that 40? 39, 40, 41?
Yeah. Hey, Bobby? Oh, he can't hear me.
Mm-hmm.
He can tell you exact dates.
Yeah.
What I do remember is...
41 was the end of it, I think, maybe.
No. Because I wouldn't have remembered the end of it. I remember when either the Japanese or the Germans surrendered and people came out of their houses and cheering and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then... And I remember my father was an air raid warden. We had blackout drills.
Right.
So you had to pull all the shades down. You couldn't put any lights on in your house. And my sister and I used to, remember the stairs?
Mm-hmm.
When you walked in the door, the stairs were right there. And then there was a landing, and then the stairs went up. We used to sit on the landing way away from all the windows. And we had a little radio there we could listen to during that. But my father was an air raid warden, so he would put on this pith helmet kind of thing on his, and take his flashlight, and he'd go up and down the neighborhood and make sure that you couldn't that everybody was doing that.
Right.
They couldn't see any light.
Jeez.
I know. So that was... Bob, what were the dates for the World War II?
The which?
World War II. What are the dates?
December 7th, 1941 to August... Pearl Harbor was December 7th, 1941. We entered 2 days later. And then the end, Japan surrendered August 12th or somewhere around that. After we'd nuked them twice, I finally said, okay, we're done.
In what year?
1945.
Okay, 45, okay.
But that's just the American war.
Right.
The European war started and an Asia war started in 38.
Okay, okay.
The invasion
okay.
of China by Japan and the invasion of Europe by...
And then the Germans surrendered one time and then the Japanese surrendered next.
The Germans surrendered in, I want to say, March or May 1945.
Okay, wow. So that, yeah, so you're like 8 years old.
Yeah, because I remember when that happened. And then I remember when... President Roosevelt died too. People then again came out of their houses and were, oh, did you hear? You know, it's like when Kennedy was shot, you know, it's like it was horrible because he kind of he saw us through the war and he was really well liked. I mean, my parents were Republicans, but nevertheless, that man was, you know, it was a big deal.
Local guy too.
Yeah, well, sort of.
Right, Kennedy, I mean?
Oh, no, Kennedy. Oh. No, I meant when Roosevelt died.
Okay.
Yeah. But
yeah.
He was from New York, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, I remember those things about the war. And we had Victory Gardens. we were the last house on the street for a long time, probably until I was, 10 or 11 maybe. And then they started building beyond. But anyway, there was a big field, and anybody who wanted a garden, the lady who owned the land, said we could put a garden in. My father, being an agronomy major and knowing about gardens, was, you know, kind of helped everybody. Because a lot of people don't know how to grow gardens, you know.
Wow.
And so we would... In the summertime, then all the people would, I guess they'd have their dinner, and then everybody sort of assemble on our lawn and tend their gardens and stuff like that. So we had Victory Gardens, and my mother and father did a lot of canning back then.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I don't know how old I was when we got our first freezer, but frozen food came in when I was a kid. It wasn't something everybody did.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and we mainly got the freezer for ice cream because my father was a total ice cream person. And, but anyway, so we had Victory Gardens, and then we had, we saved our fat, our can, you know, and put it in cans on the back porch, and they collected that for the war effort for soap, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
And then, I think we did something with metal too, I'm not sure. And we had ration stamps. You could only get, I guess, so much sugar and so much meat. It wasn't really a hardship that I remember.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's everybody was into the war effort. My mother was a gray lady, what they call gray ladies, which is kind of a person that knows first aid, but they would meet. And they would make bandages for the war effort, too. I mean, it was really, you know, we were so different from wars now. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's what I remember about that. But I, as a kid, you don't think about it's not scary. It's just not real.
Right.
You know, I mean, what... We didn't, you know, they said, well, you know, the Japanese could, because, of course, when they bombed Pearl Harbor, then they could do anything to us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, and I guess there were German submarines off the coast and that kind of thing, and we weren't that far from Boston. But as a kid, you're more interested in playing cowboys and Indians
right.
outside or something like that. We played a lot of cowboys and Indians and I had boy neighbors across the street, boy neighbors to the right, and then the first house that was built, the boy moved in there. So we were all, you know, and they all had, you know, I was the youngest in my family, of course, but they all had younger siblings. It was quite a bunch of people, a bunch of kids to play with. So we just kind of, you know, ran around the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And then, of course, TV was invented.
Yeah, I was going to ask you when that came in.
Well, the man across the street from us, they had four boys, and he worked for RCA, and they had TV. And they had, in their living room, they had a 32-inch TV, which back then was huge.
Massive.
But you had to sit way back because
right.
it was so grainy. And then they had one in their basement that we kids, because nobody else in the neighborhood had them because they were trying them out, you know.
Right.
And so...
What year was that, do you think?
Oh, Lord.
How old were you?
Well, that was probably... 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah, I was still in elementary school. My elementary school went up to grade 6, so it was right up the street.
So late 40s?
Yeah.
Wow, that must have been unique, because that probably wasn't proliferating at all.
Well, it was
then.
Black and white,
yeah.
And those odd-shaped screens, you know, that kind of thing. And then finally, when I was 12, my father got one because baseball was on it.
Oh, boy.
And
yeah.
He was a consummate Red Sox fan, baseball fan. And he was the kind that sat on the edge of his chair. He watched baseball like I watched football.
That's cool.
But so we got one, and I don't remember when it...
Before that, it would have been radio, listening to the game on the radio?
Yeah, oh yeah. I had all my favorite radio programs, The Lone Ranger, Captain Midnight, Sky King. Those were the kind of the adventure-y ones. And then later on was, let's see, Mr. and Mrs. North were the mystery, and the Fat Man had this music going, and then you hear this guy stepping on a scale, like ching, you know, and it's the Fat Man. It was terrible to make fun of that, but anyway,
jeez.
That's the way it was back then. And then on Sunday nights was the Railroad Hour. It was sponsored by some railroad,
right?
And it was, they did a musical, like Oklahoma, and I mean they did some kind of a musical back when Gordon McRae and John Wood and all those people that used to be in the Broadway shows or the first, I guess, movies that came out that were musicals too, I don't know, but we had that. They had opera on the radio, which I did not listen to, but some friends of ours did. What else? Oh, Rin Tin Tin. That came out on TV. Most of those shows actually came out on TV. Sky King was a guy who had a plane. He was kind of a cowboy with a plane. Oh, Tom Mix. In fact, over on that hutch, I have a bull. He was
I'm
a cowboy.
Sorry.
He was a cowboy. And I have a bull over there, and it's a Tom Mix bull. I found one of these thrift shops down here. I said, oh my gosh, how old is that? And they were sponsored by Ralston Hot Cereal. You know, Purina Ralston.
Right.
Okay, that make they're in a dog show now, I think.
Right.
Anyway, they used to make this hot cereal my mother would buy. That's funny.
Wow.
I haven't thought about that in a long time. Yeah, so I had... And then there were soap operas on during the day, which I never listened to, but we had a gal come out and would give the house a big cleaning, and she'd do some ironing and stuff, and her name was Barbara. And I'd come home from school. That was back when, I think that was when I was probably junior high by then. I don't know. It's kind of... I'd come home from school, and she'd tell me what was happening on Ma Perkins and all these crazy soap operas. Because we had radios in the room, these big plug-in kinds you see in the old stores now. And So she'd have one going upstairs, and she'd have one going downstairs, and and she was a hoot, that one. She went on one of the, she was black, and she was from West Roxbury, mm-hmm. where the black people lived in Boston.
Right.
And she went on one of the first marches in the 50s, so that was, I was high school by then, high school, because I graduated high school in 56, so 54, 55, and 56 were high school, so right before that was,
mm-hmm.
I don't know when that march, I think it was 54, I don't know, but I remember her going to Washington, it was down, you know, she went down to D.C., and my mother was, thought she was crazy doing that, because that was kind of scary to my mother.
Yeah, the danger. Yeah.
We had another black woman that came on Saturdays, and her name was Mary, and she brought her son once. Of course, I'd never. Where I grew up, there weren't black people.
Mm.
She brought her son, Joe, and my dad. That was when I was young. That was before Barbara. And she'd bring Joe with her sometimes, and I'd play. We'd play together, but I was fascinated with his hair.
Mm-hmm.
My father caught me rubbing his head. Because it was so different.
Yeah.
It was just curly and nappy and felt different than my hair.
Yeah.
You know, what did I know?
Yeah.
And Mary used to, I was pretty young, because she used to give me my Saturday night bath. Not that I probably took a bath more than Saturday nights, but she'd fill the tub up really high. My mother wouldn't let me do that.
Oh, funny.
So Mary did. And Mary used to make yeast rolls. She used to make rolls and, what was it? Cheese souffle.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really good.
Wow.
Both of which my mother didn't know how to make. So when Mary came, we had just fresh baked rolls out of the oven, and my father drowned them in butter, you know. That was a real treat. And then he often drove her home, though, because Saturday the buses ran different. She was the sweetest lady, really sweet. And and before that, we had a live-in maid, like, I just remember Ethel when I was really little. I'm backtracking now, but she was from New Brunswick, Canada. She was white, an English lady, and
like when you guys were little,
mm-hmm.
she mom had some help.
Yep.
Yeah.
If you can, yeah. There, in our house, there's a little. Well, you know, the stairway's here, but if you go back to the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
off of that little hallway is a tiny bedroom, and then there's another bathroom, full bath. That was her,
yeah.
her bedroom and the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
And then the kitchen was there. So. And Ethel, I don't remember.
Did she have a stairway down to the kitchen from her room?
What? No. She. Her room was right there next to the kitchen.
Oh.
Her room, bathroom, kitchen.
Because yeah, in our house in Temple, there was a stairway that came down from the upstairs bedroom where the maid's quarters was.
Yeah.
My bedroom. We
oh,
took
yeah.
it out, but it came in right into the to the kitchen.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. What's I gonna say? Oh, Ethel.
But we didn't have a maid.
You're just a peasant, Lepre.
Yeah.
So I remember. Oh, I know. She caught me in a lie. I'll remember it to this day. But they had a lollipop. My mother had lollipops or something in the kitchen, and I took a paper bag and I stuck a lollipop in there.
Mm-hmm.
The stick part of it was sticking out, but I came running outside, and she caught me, and she said, "What do you got in that bag?" And I said, "Oh, it's just a doll with a stick in her hand, right?" I was probably
hilarious.
3 or 4 years old, you
yeah.
know? Probably four. I know. And she wasn't buying that.
That's funny.
So She told me, she said, "No, you must tell lies like that. That's a, what she called it, a story, and that's not a true story. That's a lie." Something like that. And I guess I was pretty mortified even at that age. Because I must have been, because I remember it.
Yeah.
Because, but I don't remember too much more about her, except that she was like a mother's helper. I think she came along at, probably when, see, Ellen was 3,
mm-hmm.
and I was a baby, so she lived with us for a while. My sister's better at remembering all that stuff. I know we had other live-in people. We had a student from one of the junior colleges lived in. She took the longest baths. I can remember she'd stay in that bathroom because the bath upstairs, we had to share a bathroom with her. And of course, my parents had their own bathroom. But so the 3 of us gals were sharing that bathroom. But it was fine, except that she stayed in there forever. Oh, gosh. Okay.
So the like when you were grade school, junior high, in that age, like you'd come home from school, your dad would come home, have dinner promptly at 6, and then you listen to the radio, or what do you do with, like, entertainment and then go to sleep?
Well, some of my programs were on before dinner.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, like Sky King and Captain Midnight. I used to send away I have a box of stuff that I sent away for. Sometime when you're at the other house, I saved it all. It's all worth a lot of money now. Not a lot of money, but, you know, the decoder ring is $100. People don't have that stuff anymore. But you set a box top and a quarter, and you get some kind of thing.
Right.
So a lot of those programs were before. And then the Lone Ranger was on at 7:30 at night. And, yeah, so I'd listen to a program, and I was not a reader. My sister was a reader. I was not a reader. I had terrible eyes, still do. And, but I was in the good weather, I'd play outside till it was dark. I was the athletic one. My sister was the reader, you know. I wanted to be out doing stuff. And, I was my father's tomboy, that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
So, and I don't remember watching a lot of TV. We all, well, even when I had homework and Groucho Marx was on, we'd all have to watch Groucho Marx. He was so funny. He was just silly. And a lot of those quiz shows and stuff that my parents liked to watch. But I don't remember watching a lot of TV until I was in college. Until I met your dad, actually. We used to watch all those Saturday night westerns when I was dating him.
Wow.
But I don't remember. TV wasn't a big thing as much for me. And if there was a baseball game on, forget it. Nobody'd watch TV except the baseball game. We watched cartoons and Howdy Doody. And sometimes, what else was on? Captain Kangaroo? That came later. Well, that came later, yeah. But Howdy Doody was one of the first TV shows for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a puppet, a little cowboy puppet. Do you know who he was?
Yeah.
All right. And then, what was the man's name? I can't remember the man's name.
I don't know.
And later on, on Sunday, there was Hopalong Cassidy, and all the westerns were on then. On the weekends, during the day, I can't remember too much in the evening, but there were all the westerns. They were really cowboy shows.
Wow.
Gene Autry, Roy Rogers. Hopalong Cassidy was our favorite. The boy next door that built right next door, I used to eat my Sunday dinner after church. And then go over there to his house and eat another Sunday dinner. His mother would set up, it would be maybe an hour or two between times because Hopalong Cassidy maybe came on at 3 in the afternoon or something like that. And he was an hour, I think. And she'd set up TV tables for us, and we'd sit there and watch this. And she was a good cook. I mean, I don't know how they ate all that food. Yeah, it's funny. But that was what we did for entertainment, I guess.
So you lived there through high school. Did you do, in high school, did you do sports or any kind of after school stuff?
I went to a private school. Mm-hmm. And I went to Dana Hall out in Wellesley. I took the bus until my junior year, and I got my license, and I had an old Chevy coupe that I drove to school. Because I was a day student. It was just, three grades and maybe, I'm trying to think how many day students there were. Out of 300 kids, maybe there were 60 day students, I guess.
What does that mean, a day student?
Well, we didn't stay there overnight. It was a boarding school.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. People from all over the world. I mean, there were people from Saudi Arabia and South America, whatever, but people from all over. And
what was that called? Was the school called?
Dana Hall. Oh, yeah. Google it. It's fancy now, I'll tell you. It was a bunch of old buildings when I went there, but now it's like a college campus.
Fancy for them, I'm sure.
Well, it was. It was a good school, and I'm just not a great student. My largest class was 12 kids.
Wow.
Something like that. It was a good education.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, I did. I was center forward on the hockey team. I was, field hockey, and I was not good at basketball. Basketball back then had a split court,
mm-hmm.
for girls anyway. So your guards were on one side, and the forwards were on the other side, and you were a guard. You couldn't cross over. You had to pass it to the forward to get the basket.
Oh, geez.
It was really weird.
Wow.
And I was. I mean, I played it, but I wasn't.
Like offense and defense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
they couldn't. Yeah.
Like hockey.
It's
football,
not like
kind
it
of
is
weird
now.
Hybrid.
It's crazy. It was crazy. So we had to do sports, actually, but I liked sports. I was really good at hockey and field hockey. And I was on the varsity squad there. And we played other private schools,
mm-hmm.
is what we did. And then spring was baseball. Hockey was the best sport I had. Baseball was okay. It was fun. But hockey's really move. You really move.
Mm-hmm. Did you play hardball baseball or softball?
Softball. Oh, yeah. You never play.
Listening to a StoryCorps interview, and this woman, I don't remember the year, but she was, there's a rule called the Tubby Rule or something, because she cut her hair and, pretended to be a boy and made the team.
Oh, yeah.
And then, at some point before the season started, she confessed to her coach that she was a girl, and he said, well, she's just as good or better than the boys,
yeah.
So he allowed it. And then she got to play that whole season. And then the powers that be, went into their back rooms and made a rule, there's no girls allowed in Little League Baseball. So I didn't know. I don't know when that was. I want to say it was around that same time. But
no, it was always softball back then. Excuse me. At home, we would play sandlot softball. Everybody in the neighborhood would come just go in the vacant lot next to us across the street. It would always be softball because we were kids. It was kids and adults and, that kind of thing. But, no. We didn't. I don't know. And then another thing I did at Dana Hall was the day students put on a show every year at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Put on a show for the rest of the school. And it usually was like a Broadway review kind of thing where sing and dance. I always danced. I couldn't. I mean, singing, I could never remember the lines. But dancing came natural to me, so I just, and it was just it was more athletic, I guess, there again.
Yeah.
And I had taken ballet and tap, ballroom dancing.
Mm-hmm.
I started ballroom dancing when I was fourth grade, I think, and right up through ninth grade.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, it was that's a whole other story. That's really fun. But, yeah, so we'd put on these shows, and we, you know, did all the scenery, and one of the kids would direct it. And, I mean, it was just, it was a whole production.
Yeah.
And we, Dana Hall had a big, Bardwell Auditorium had a big auditorium because they had famous people come there and do shows maybe three or four times a year, like famous Spanish dancer or some pianist or whatever it was. Right. It was a nice auditorium. And so I always did dance numbers with my friends and those. My friend Betsy and I always did that. And, I mean, not, I mean, maybe it'd be three or four of us dancing. I never did a solo particularly, but, you know, it was fun. And then what else did we do there? Something just passed through my head. I remember my high school boyfriend was in the audience when I was really nervous because he was in there. Why is he coming to this thing? But anyway. And we had dances with other, with boys' private schools, which was really weird. I mean, there you are. It's the typical girls here and boys here sort of thing.
Yeah.
Although at high school level, you get a little more mingly. In junior high, forget it. It's just painful.
Right.
Yeah. But, I mean, unless you had a boyfriend, which I did a little bit, but not much.
This is the early 50s?
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Well, okay. 54, 55, 56 were my years high of school. Dana.
Okay.
And by the time I was...
Mid-50s.
I think I had my sophomore year. I had my boyfriend was a kid from town, and then this Dave guy was my boyfriend the rest of those other 2 years, right? Yeah.
3 years.
The 3 years in the, at Dana Hall.
What, like?
Sophomore, junior, senior year.
Okay. Not grade 9 was like middle school still?
Yes, 7, 8, and 9, I'm sorry. That 7, 8, and 9 was at a public middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Newton had 4. Are you all right? 4 middle schools. And where I lived in Wauban, I could either go to the one in Newton Center or the one in West Newton. So I chose the one in West Newton because my friends were going there. And my sister went to the other one. So that, again, I'd take the bus. And that was 3 grades, 900 kids. It was huge.
Wow.
And yeah, that was weird. That was fun. It was scary. You know, going from a little elementary school to that. But we did it. Yeah.
Back down to a smaller school after that.
Right. Well, my friends were going to private school, and my father said, "Do you want to do that too?" And I said, "Yeah." And he knew I'd get a better education because, like I said, I really wasn't a great student.
Hmm.
I always did well in math, but
that's a little ironic that you ended up being a teacher for your whole career.
Well, that's I never I had trouble reading. I was a very slow reader.
Hmm.
And my reading comprehension was not good because I would just, you know, I took remedial reading, and Dana Hall offered it. They didn't have it back then, but I had no visual memory. I couldn't remember how to spell things. I still do that.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm in heaven with spell check and stuff on these phones.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I wonder if that's because, you know, you didn't have great vision.
Yeah.
So you're a lot of that, if it's blurry at all,
yeah,
you're not really retaining.
And I'm turned off by it. I finally got glasses in second grade because I couldn't, and my mother said I came home from school and said, "I can see the blackboard now."
Wow.
I mean, come on, you know?
Yeah.
How I even learned to read, I don't know. But, and it was, I mean, I didn't like to sit still very long anyway, but it was hard for me, so I just didn't want to do it. Then I got to Dana Hall, and they kind of straightened me out on the whole thing, which probably my parents knew that was a better choice for me.
Yeah.
And math always made a lot of sense to me. I had the most wonderful math teacher for those 3 years. That she was amazing. I was in advanced math. And then I went to UNH and I got a student intern for my math class.
Oh, wow.
Who read us the book. I didn't understand anything she said. I said, I can read the book. You've got to explain all this. And she couldn't do it. But I could. That was calculus, so I was out of my element. But anyway, so that was Dana Hall. I'm trying to think.
This is probably backtracking, but you told me somewhat recently that you had like scarlet fever or something when you were a kid.
Oh, I had rheumatic fever.
Rheumatic fever.
When I was little.
Okay.
Yes, I was in bed for a year when I was like 4.
That just blows me away. I was in bed for a year.
Well.
But that, so that was.
They invented really the sulfur drug back then, and that saved, my sister had it too. That saved me. And then I wasn't well enough to go to kindergarten. I went the first day of kindergarten, and then they let me go the last 2 weeks of kindergarten, so I would get to know the kids.
Oh, right.
And then in first grade, I was okay. Second grade, I got a complete bill of health in second grade. But yeah, no, it was, I don't even know what, I had, it's a, like a heart murmury thing, and I don't even know what it's all about, but we had that. I can remember my sister had it, I had it, and then my father came down with scarlet fever. We were all sick. My mother was like this super nurse.
Yeah.
You know, she was great. But she taught me how to play solitaire probably when I was 4 years. She'd come up and play games with me and stuff, but most of the time I was kind of left by myself. I remember, and the doctors used to come to your house back then, and I remember my little bedroom was the room next to my parents' room. It had a door that went into their room, because I used to get nightmares and stuff, so it was on the front of the house, and I remember peeking out the window, kneeling up on my bed, looking out the window, mm-hmm. seeing the doctor's car pull up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had been running around the house because, I mean, I was 4. You know, my mother had been in the basement doing the laundry, and I remember I had to get up and move around.
Yeah.
Go and by the time he came upstairs and listened to my heart, I'm sure it was pounding a mile a minute, but what did I know, you know, because I jumped back in bed. I remember doing that. Dr. Stenzel.
Jeez.
I know.
Yeah, so, that sounds ridiculously
sounds crazy,
boring,
huh?
Yeah, for a kid to say. Jeez.
Well, and when I was pregnant with Linda, I mean, I had to tell them my medical history and all that. They really kept track of my heart, but it wasn't. They said when I was at my heaviest, you know, like 8 or 9 months along, they could hear a little bit of a murmur, but it was really nothing to worry about, I guess. Because
wow.
I went on and had 2 more.
Yeah.
But,
jeez.
Yeah, it leaves a scar tissue, I guess, is what it is.
Hmm.
So I don't know how that affected my sister going to school. I don't know.
Hmm.
That, and then, yeah, so they invented sulfur, and then after that it was penicillin. They gave me so much penicillin for other things when I was a kid that I developed a bad allergy to it.
Interesting, yeah. I think
a lot of people did.
Rita is as well. All right, so the
kind of jumping around.
Yeah, that's interesting. So in high school, you had one boyfriend for small, and then another boyfriend for the rest of high school?
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
Wow.
Pretty much. My first boyfriend, well, I mean, one that you kind of went out with all the time and studied and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had other little, oh gosh, I'm wearing his ID bracelet or something
right,
for
right.
2 weeks, and then you don't like him anymore or something. I had a couple of those, but Tony Hill. He had this old Mercury, one of those round cars. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it was a 48, a 49 Merc or something like that. And I lived on a slight incline. He'd have to get it going to get it going. You know what I mean? Like push it to, and then he'd jump it. Oh, that's boy. How we'd take off. I mean, it would be so funny. Oh, God. So, yeah. Tony Hill and then Dave Carlson. It was somebody I met through my friend Mari. Actually, the woman I'm going to go see in Oregon.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, I am so, yeah. Gosh, I haven't seen her in, what, 50 years or something. But I don't know if it's been that long. But anyway, she always, her parents, her father was a doctor, and her mom was a nurse, and she had an older brother. But anyway, they always rented a house on Winnipesaukee in the summer. And so she would go away in the summer, but she'd always ask me up for a week or two or whatever, you know, just to go up there. And Dave was working in the Dockside restaurant that's on the pier in Wolfboro, if you've ever been up in that area.
Yeah.
Okay, he used to work there. And I met him through her, because it was high school now. Mm-hmm. So there was partying going every night. And her father, stayed in Newton working. Mm-hmm. He was a radiologist. He was working with cancer patients even back then. But they didn't realize all the stuff they know about cancer now. So anyway, he worked with dying people, bless his heart. But anyway, her mom was, they found out later she was bipolar, but she was an alcoholic. I don't know what to, she was a pill pusher, you know, she was a wonderful woman. I just loved her, but she was gonzo bonzo, you know, and she didn't care what Mari did, so we'd go out partying every night, whatever, or there'd be a party there.
Right.
And so you meet all these guys, and it was just great fun, I'll tell you. I mean, by then I wasn't a beastie-looking person. I was fairly good-looking then, I guess. And you know what I mean? We had a great time. We'd go water skiing during the day, and one of the guys that lived in town, actually, had a lot of money. His beautiful boat take us all over the place. And
wow.
Oh, it was bad, but it was great. It was
it
great, but it was
fun.
Bad.
Yeah.
And her mother had a convertible, old Ford convertible, and so we used to take her mother's car all the time. But one time we partied at her house, where we were, and her father came up early that day, or that night, or something. He came in, and the whole place was like, you know, beer bottles everywhere, and people making out in closets, and I mean, it was just...
That's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Like a movie.
Oh, yeah. Right. And he comes walking in, right? Well, he kicks everybody out of there, and of course, Mari and I both are like, happy, happy people by then. So he just looks at us, and he's really pissed at his wife. I mean, he's really mad at her.
Yeah.
He used to have to hide her bottles, and I mean, it was not a happy marriage, but anyway. So he took one look at us and looked around. He said, when you girls get up tomorrow, this place better be cleaned up fast, right? So here we are. We get up in the morning. And I had such a hangover. I can remember holding the coffee cup and my hands shaking. And I was like, oh my God. So we did. We had to clean the whole, cleaned it all up. And he was such a sweet man. And he never yelled. I mean, he just would give us this look.
Mm.
He's this really stoic Norwegian man. Big guy. I don't know why you girls have to do that, but, you know, clean it up. Well, anyway, so
yeah.
I don't know what he said to his wife, because I think we probably get out of there pretty fast. I mean, she was such a dear, but she was just kind of hopeless.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that was when I met Dave, and oh gosh, I had his ring, and his mother, he lived down in Stoughton, Mass, and, but his parents owned a house that was in their family up in Sandwich, which is in that area, you know. And we went out for a long time. But then when I went away to college, he went to Norwich University before, he was older than me. He went to Norwich University. First he went to Tilton for post-grad high school. Then he went to Norwich University, which is in Vermont, which is a military.
Okay.
So that meant he was in the Army.
Oh.
And, well, after you get out, you have to put in your time. Mm-hmm. It's not quite West Point, but it's still.
Right.
And, but I went to a winter carnival there, which was fun. My freshman year, I went to, I think that made me catch up with him. I'm not sure. But then we kind of drifted apart because I wasn't going to be at UNH and not be able to date. I mean, I was, mm-hmm. I guess I just wasn't that serious about marrying him or anything like that.
Right.
I mean, I went to UNH and all the Korean War veterans were coming back. And the ratio of men to women was 4-1. I wasn't going to pass that up, right? So my freshman year, I just dated like crazy until I met Julie Butler.
Mm.
And I really fell for him. But he was black and he was a senior and he was going off to med school and oh dear. It was, but I really loved him. He was such an interesting person and a nice person, and he used to drive me home on vacations because he had to go through Boston to get to New York, whatever, you know, and
mm-hmm.
my parents would have coffee and pastries when he dropped me off or something like that. A couple of times he did that. But it just wasn't meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And in my sophomore year, because Ron was his best friend, so sophomore year, I came back to school, and there was Ron Lawton on my doorstep.
So you knew him?
Through Julie.
From Julie, yeah.
Yeah. I fixed him up with my roommate one night. And actually, he and Julie came down to Newton after school. After school was out, they came down in the summer, and then I fixed Ron up with Mari. But it just kind of fizzled out.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a shame because I really did like him, but my mother, I said, oh my gosh, you can't tell your father you're dating a black man or a Negro or whatever they called it back then, Negro.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've just chosen this way of life and we don't do that and that's not acceptable and blah,
wow.
blah, blah. Yeah, they were really, you know, I mean, she understood. I could always talk to my mother and she understood where I was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And she was never harsh about it, but it was just kind of, that's the way life is. And that's what we don't do. And your father wouldn't like it. Or, of course, Julie ended up being our best man
mm-hmm.
a year later or whatever it was.
That must be weird.
And my parents started to talk about, because they didn't want me to marry him anyway, marry Ron anyway. But I just said, well, if you don't want him, we'll just elope. I'm marrying this guy. And so, no, we want to be part of it. So,
mm-hmm.
and Julie was the best man. And my mother said to me, well, what will the minister think for this black, this Negro from New York going to be? I said, he's a man of God. We're all the same in God's eyes. What is that?
Yeah.
I was really, but they didn't show that side of themselves a whole lot, but they did. They were just, it was just part of the culture. They weren't mean people.
Mm-hmm.
My mother did a lot of really good stuff, charity stuff, and, you know, my father too, but it just was,
what they were taught.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't... It more or less was just the way it was. You just didn't mingle.
Right.
You know, they belonged to a country club that didn't allow...
Right.
They didn't even allow Jewish people. The Jewish people had their own, which was probably better than the one we had. But anyway, I just... Once your dad showed up, he just... I mean, we knew each other and we had a lot of laughs, and we just kept on... I didn't date anybody else that year, just him. We just became buddies and friends, and then it became more...
Sophomore year?
Mm-hmm.
What brought you to UNH as opposed to any other...
as opposed to the Smith and Mount Holyoke, like my friends went to, because my grades weren't great. I didn't want to go to an all-girl college, for one thing. Back then, they were all girls.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Smith, Mount Holyoke, Vassar, Radcliffe, all the Ivy League girls' schools and all that that Dana Hall sort of pushes you towards. Well, not so much, though. A lot of kids were. I'm trying to think where else there were. I just wanted to go somewhere where I could bowl. You know, I didn't want to be home, but I didn't care whether I went far away. I knew I wasn't a really good student. So I figured UNH would be not a hard school. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. Only my calculus.
Mm-hmm.
Forget. But anyway. And I wanted to be able to date and have fun.
Right.
Do all that stuff.
Yeah.
So.
That's what college is for.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to where did I apply and didn't get in? Bryn Mawr, I think. Bryn Mawr, and I did apply a couple of other places, and then I didn't get in, and my parents are thinking, what are they going to do? I suppose they're thinking, what are they going to do with this kid? I mean, it's almost too bad that I just couldn't have worked, because I wasn't that, I just didn't think about it, you know, I wasn't a real party animal, but I was more or less just kind of this naive,
mm-hmm.
happy-go-lucky kind of,
yeah.
Oh gosh, whatever happens, happens, and it's okay, and I'm happy, you know, and
yeah.
I love people, and I'm having a good time with my friends. And I mean, I was just not a serious person in terms of what my future was going to be, and I just didn't think that way, or I didn't,
right.
I had a lot of, I mean, I grew up very secure and very, thank God for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been through a lot, but I think I had a good feeling about myself, and my parents always loved me and always made me feel worthy and all that kind of thing, so I was feeling great. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm forever grateful for that.
Yeah.
I couldn't have gone through what I went through afterwards if I didn't have that. Core feeling of okay, I'm okay, I'm worthy, I'm not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the time when I was 17, 18 years old, it was like everything was kind of an adventure and it was going to be okay, and I was just totally naive and totally, and your father, I mean, can you see it? The way your father is and me.
Yeah.
I mean, he told Grammy Ree. He said, I think Jane's the one. She will wear well. Wear well.
What does that mean?
That means that I would just, no matter what happens, I'm okay. And it worked up to a point. And then I thought, oh my God, this guy's nuts. But you know what I mean? I mean, he was bad for me because I didn't have any... I couldn't.
Yeah, no, I get that. You're.
I couldn't fight him. I couldn't. I didn't. I don't have the ammunition or any what it would take to. I do now, but I back then. So I think when it came to going to college, I just thought, oh, whatever, you know, kind of UNH appealed to me. I knew a lot of the guys from Wolfboro and that kind of thing that went there, and it was a small town near the ocean. You know, it was fine.
Yeah.
It was really fun. I'm telling you, my freshman year, I had a blast. I did. I dated all kinds of guys, people, at, a lot of veterans, you know. And some of them were a little scary because they were older and they were looking for more than just a date, you know. They wanted somebody to sleep with, and back then it was like, oh my God.
Right. Yeah.
But most of them were really nice, and they had one grad student. He was a sweetheart. He was pre-med. I don't know, just
interesting. So they'd go off to war for a few years and then come back
and they could go
start college? Or,
yeah, on the GI Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got money.
So they'd be, you're like 18, 19, 20, and they're probably... 21, 22,
23, 24. Yeah, that, yeah depending on... Yeah, they were older. Not all of... I mean, I dated kids, guys my own age, too. I joined a sorority, which was kind of a farce. I never got into that. I did it for a while, because that's what you do. There again, see, I didn't think about...
Right.
I didn't have any strong convictions one way or the other. I just, I loved everybody, and everything was rosy, cozy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I had a roommate that drove me crazy my second year. But my first year roommate, she was a peach. She was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But I just really, I don't know, the sorority business is, it was fine. It was nice to have, to go there and be accepted by everybody. You know, we did a whole rushing thing, and you visited them all and all that. And I fit in with those girls. It was fine. And I fit in with them better because I wasn't a preppy type of person. I was just more or less myself. And, you know, I had some convictions of, and some sense of who I was. So I didn't... But, and I did really like the girls there. But then when it came to the secret ceremony.
Oh, wow.
The initiation, right?
Right?
Oh, God, you had to do stupid stuff on the initiation. It wasn't bad, but like eat with your fingers and just stupid stuff like that. But then the secret ceremony, it was so crazy. I was out all night with Julie, right? I used to walk in with the night watchman, so I didn't have to, like at 1 o'clock, we have to be back by 11 with the bells ringing. Forget that. I'd walk in at 1 o'clock with the night watchman, and he never would tell anybody, but anyway. So this night I was out late, and... So I'm waiting, what was it? Oh. Yeah. What was that? I think he got me back. Just in time to go in, and I didn't sleep. I went in. Oh, I know what it was. Okay. I went in, I had to change my clothes, and I fell up the stairs. My shoe came off, and I cut myself. I just caught myself on the cement step.
Mm-hmm.
Cut myself, right? So, putting my foot back into my shoe, bloody mess, right? So I go in, and I think he dropped me off at the sorority. And here I am. Well, they put some band-aids on it, but what the hell? I'm walking on my foot, and it's gonna bleed.
Right.
You know. So. Then you go in, and I was so tired. So it had, I think we had to wear a certain kind of dress, but they put a gown on you, and they take you in the candlelight, and they have it all fixed up, so you're going in this. It's like getting married, you know? No, that's worse than, I don't know what it's like. It's like the Mormon thing. I don't know. But anyway, and then they secret handshake, and you repeat all these words, and And I just thought, this is bullshit. I can just remember thinking, what is this?
That's hilarious.
This is just not, I mean, it was, and I was so, I while I was waiting to go in, I fell asleep because I hadn't slept all night.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, it was so bad. Oh, God. Anyway. And then I was... And then the next... You couldn't stay in the sorority house till you were a junior. Of course, I was married before that, so I never did stay in there, but I was still... But I went up there a lot, went to meetings. And then it was rush again for the next group of people, right? So you have all these kids that come, girls that come in, and you take down their names and you get to know them. And there's a whole month of rushing, what they call rushing, or whatever
right.
it is.
Right.
And then you have these meetings and you discuss all these people. Well, we don't like her because she's this, she's that.
Oh, or
it was just a whole trash session.
Right.
And I hated that.
Yeah.
I absolutely hated that. I thought, this is awful. They are cutting these people to... They're probably very nice people, and you're judging them on... I mean, I really realized that it was not for me.
Right.
I just really... Oh, this is not me. But anyway, it didn't matter anyway, because I got married. But I just used to come out of those things, and I remember telling your dad, I said, oh, my gosh. I really hate that. Anyway... Your dad used to, my father used to send me $30 a month for spending money.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, back then that was a good.
Yeah.
You know, we could buy a pint of vodka or a six pack of beer, whatever it was. And we'd make it last because your father had no money, because he was there on, you know, work, study, and scholarships and the whole nine yards. So he lived at the Bedlers. At this house, you know, with his people, his high school guidance counselor lived there, had moved there, and he was living with them, which was great. But that's where we used to watch all the Saturday night westerns.
Oh.
Gunsmoke and Paladin and Wanted Dead or Alive.
Mm-hmm.
Steve McQueen was, you know, James wow. Arness, whatever. But, So he wrote the movie review column for the paper. You probably know that.
No, I didn't.
Well, he for the UNH paper that came out all the time, you know, every week or whatever it was. So he'd write the movie column. So we got into the movies free.
That's
so we didn't have to pay for the movies.
Jeez.
So we that $30 would stretch, you know, to. I don't know, we'd eat out. We used to go down to the traffic circle, I guess, and eat at Harley's, but we didn't spend a lot of money. I don't know. We used to go to things at the school, too. I don't remember too much of, or just go out to the beach or go out parking somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he had friends, too, that we used to hang out with, Bump and Betty and then people from Derry that he knew, Gloria and Pete Klein.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And we started sleeping together fairly soon, trying to think, like, after Christmas.
And he's 3 years older than you?
Yeah.
So was he a...
Well, he flunked out the first time he went to school. He flunked out, and he would come back. He had come back.
Okay. So he's 2 years ahead of you. Maybe in college?
Yeah. Well, no, because he had come back. He was probably... Let's see.
If Julie was a senior when you were a freshman?
Yeah. And so that your dad must have been a junior then, maybe. Or maybe he was just a freshman again. No? Sophomore? No, I guess he was... He started... No, you have to ask him. I think maybe he was a freshman.
I was just trying to think of the order of how you went through school together and
right.
Like if you both graduated at the same time or went to
no,
work.
No, we would have had I not married him, got pregnant, whatever. See, he graduated when Linda was 14 months old, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you finished school later?
Oh, I went to NEC, remember?
I don't.
You don't remember that?
No, I don't. I was trying to put that together in my head. Because part of the time we're talking about this, I keep picturing NEC, and I had to go, no, it's not NEC. It's UNH in Durham.
Mm-mm.
So that's, I'm rejiggering all of the pictures in my head. So you dropped out of college because you're married and having kids.
Yep.
And then at some point he gets a job at NEC and you go back to school.
Right. Well, there's a lot of stuff in there between.
Yeah. it's funny, when we were talking about when you're a little kid and you don't really pay attention to this or that, same. I don't, you know, a lot of those details I just never knew. That's why I was in right now. I was picturing all of these things at NEC, and I had to go, oh, no, had to have been later. You're at UNH, that's in Durham, it's a completely different campus, and I started.
Right.
I think I had just blurred those in my head.
Well, you wouldn't have even seen Nono, because
he was like a high school teacher or something.
Yes.
In Rye or
Sixth grade teacher in Rye when.
So there was a huge section of time. Now that I'm thinking about it,
you weren't born till he went to graduate school.
Right.
You were born in Atlanta when he went to graduate school. So you didn't. He was done with Rye, went to graduate school, and then went to work at then he went to work at Athol.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So that's, I think...
I was pregnant. Wait a minute.
It's going to be like a 10-year...
I was pregnant with you
gap.
When we were in Athol. When he was working at that high school. Then... No, so that would have been... But then we went to Atlanta, right? You were born in Atlanta.
Yeah, born in Atlanta.
God damn, I can't even get it now. I just had the two in Athol, but I got pregnant with you.
I'm thinking like...
Yep,
That's
what it is.
Linda and I are... I guess 5-ish years apart.
Right.
A little less maybe, but...
She's going to be 59.
Yeah, I'm 63, but it's like April and
September. Right.
But, so that, and I'm thinking, I don't know. I don't remember being in Henniker until I was probably three. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That connects. So that would be
1966. After graduate school is when you got the job, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm trying to think. Well, where you were?
You graduated high school in 56.
Yeah.
So then you had maybe 57, 58.
And Linda was born 59.
59. And then Henniker in 66. So there's 7 years of other stuff there.
Whew.
7 years of two more kids and
Mike was born
around. 1960.
Huh.
This is it's really interesting to me because I don't know anything. Right.
Mike,
I just have kind of blurred
stories
about that.
Mike was born when we were living outside of Durham. What was your father doing? Was he still in school? How can that be?
Probably.
Well, then Linda was 2.5 when he was... You know those letters?
Mm-hmm.
They go from...
Oh, yeah.
They go up to 65. So, that will tell some of it, if you could just skim through those.
Because
I'm really confused now, because...
It's a good 7 years of, like, I don't know what happened from...
Well, how many... years did he teach in Rye? Because I remember Mike was, he must have started teaching in Rye when we were still living in Durham, or outside in Lee, actually. Then we moved to Hampton. Mike was about a year old. He was still teaching in Rye, so maybe that would be 2 years in Rye.
Because, I mean, to get a master's degree, that probably took some time.
Well, that took a year. That took a year in Atlanta. You were born in September, and then we stayed there that whole year.
And then there's two more years before we get to...
Then after that, he got the job...
Oh, Salem.
Salem!
Yeah, we lived in Salem before Henniker.
Okay, right. He got the... Where did he work in Salem? Oh, Salem High School. Right? Yes. That's where he met Ruth Craig. Okay, Salem High School.
Yeah, that's... I remember...
And then from that, he got a job. Right.
That's... I have some memories of that...
Okay, yes.
...house.
These are all split entrance things.
Right. I was like a year and a half old.
Yep. And you went to Mrs. Kelly's. I forgot that whole part. Mike was just, he was old enough for kindergarten, but she ran a kindergarten. Okay. Mrs. Kelly's. She had a bunch of kids. God bless her. She had her own children. She lived right near Canobie Lake Park. Okay, and I worked at W.T. Grant's, but it was like, you know what that was? That was like a big department store, mm-hmm. like a Sears.
Yep.
Okay, so I used to drop you and Mike off at Mrs. Kelly's, and you were just a little guy. And you loved it. Mike cried. I mean, you know, you were like, oh yeah, what's this place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, and then after that, then came Henniker, and I think you were three when we went to Henniker, because you were just the boys in the dorm. They just loved you to pieces, especially Roger. But you were pretty cute. Remember hitchhiking?
Yeah. I was just telling, I think I had told her, but Rita and I were just talking about that the other day.
Oh, my God.
And it was...
putting the cat in the fridge. You did a lot of crazy stuff.
I think I was trying to remember how old I was when I hitchhiked, and I was thinking it was like five or...
Yeah, you were older.
Thereabouts.
Go over to Hans Peter's house.
I remember... I didn't understand that I did anything wrong.
Right.
You know?
No,
it was just, I remember...
That's what all the guys did.
Yeah. I remember, you I was waiting for you to give me a ride, and you were finishing doing something, and you said, just wait out by the car or something. And I waited, and then I just got the idea, like, oh, I'll just, like, bum, I guess was the word. And I walked to the end of that parking lot to the side toward Hans's house and put my thumb up. The very first car stopped. And we went down to the center of town, maybe the left, back up toward 89, where their house is on the corner of that street. It goes up toward Bradford. And I remember going, it's right there, it's right there. And he's like slowed down at the last second and let me out and went in there. And I don't remember, I've been told, I just must have come in, and they're like, hey, how you doing? Because they knew I was coming.
Oh, John
like,
called us.
Where's your mom? Like you probably would have come in with me.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure.
And I'm like, I don't, you know, then I must have told them that I hitchhiked, and
they called.
Was I on the phone, or did they call?
No, they called.
They just called.
I just remember they called.
Yeah. I just remember, like, you know, but that was, I think, we were talking to Dad about that a few weeks ago, because it was like, he always had this kind of, I think he battled with not becoming his father, his biological father, and that kind of sociopathic nature that his father had, like mm-hmm. just to steal something and, well, I need it more than they do, kind of that,
yeah,
make up your own rules. And so I think he kind of overcompensated and kind of, you know, like assumed that I might have that, or, you know, try to make sure that I don't or something. But mm-hmm. so, because there were several things that we talked about, like the this arrow that behind Row House was this concrete building where they stored a bunch of sports equipment for the college, and I went in there mm-hmm. and there was an arrow had spilled out of the arrow box onto the floor, and instead of putting it back in the box, in my little 5-year-old brain, I went, I know the lady who teaches that class, she's out with the class,
oh.
they're all shooting arrows at those big hay target things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll go give it to her and go, like, this isn't where it's supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You would know what to do with this. And then I saw him coming down. I'm in trouble for having this. So I just froze and stood there, like, behind the building.
Not knowing why you're in trouble.
Poking it into the mud, like, oh boy. And then he came and marched me back up there, and it was this grilling at the table about, you know, you stole the arrow. What were you going to do with the arrow? You stole. And I just was innocent and naive and just like, you know, a 5-year-old brain going, I was going to give it to the lady because
mm-hmm.
she's in charge of the arrows.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he, and we talk about it, you know,
mm.
now, like that, I think that was his motivation, but it ended up being like a grilling at that table for probably hours.
Yeah.
Until I just like caved and went, all right, whatever. Like, yeah, I was stealing it, whatever. And I, like, I just did, like,
yeah,
tell him what he wanted to hear so I could get away from the table.
Oh, God.
But it was, you know,
but
it was, you know, that was, I forgot why we got on that subject.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, really little.
Like, yeah, you don't, yeah.
But, yeah, I have little highlighty kind of memories of kindergarten and some antics there and getting kicked out. And then I think I went to Julia Hazen's house
mm-hmm.
each day until... So, anyway, but that... So, that at that point, you went back to school
mm-hmm.
at NEC
mm-hmm.
to finish...
Took me 3 years to finish.
Wow. That's...
66 to...
Won't go into all of that, but
69.
That's how
yeah.
you all met and all of that.
Yeah.
So what was your degree in?
Early child, or, you know, elementary education.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, that's so
I
cool
mean,
that the actual
went,
thing that you ended up doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. When I went to UNH, I wanted to study psychology,
mm-hmm.
and I did take psych courses because I was really interested in that, but
mm-hmm.
what does that get you?
Mm-hmm.
Graduate school and all that, it was just
right.
kind of, you know, I didn't.
You'd either have to like go in the direction of a psychiatrist
right.
or like a clinician
right.
like a research
and,
or something.
Right, and I had to think of something practical, and then I had children, and I thought, well, I have my summers off with them if I become a teacher, and I like kids, and sort of that. There again, I kind of took not the easy way out, because teaching isn't easy, but...
but a practical...
Yeah.
Thing that you can be good at and enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just didn't, and I knew I could pass the courses well. I mean, I did really well. I was on the dean's list at NEC, except for one course. My senior year, I was just filling my quota.
Mm-hmm.
Took sociology again. I had taken that at UNH. But with Andy Sisson, and, he was such a weirdo. I mean, I was kind of an adult then, you know, and I just, he was one of these people that looked at you like this and blinked and looked you in the eye.
Oh,
and talked,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, one of those. And he'd read from the book, And I just didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't work for him. And he said to me, I mean, I passed and everything, but he said to me, plus the fact he was, the poor man was gay, but he was very timid kind of person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he said to me, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And I said, what do you mean? You know, it's your grade and I have to give you a C. And I said, that's okay. I don't care.
Mm.
You know, I was dean's list and that's wonderful. My parents think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
But I could give a shit, you
right.
know?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm in school, three children, the whole thing, you know, live in a dorm of crazy people. So, and married to a crazy person.
Wow.
So when he said, well, what will your husband say? I'm afraid Ron will get mad at me.
Oh, boy.
I said, no, don't worry about that. I said, Ron, you know, that would really be low on his list priorities. But anyway, I said, no, it's fine. Give me a C. So he gave me a C. But other than that, I did well. But I did write a senior paper, because you had to write a senior paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was in an educational psychology thing. I don't know. It would have taken so much time to do a research paper that I really didn't have time. I took a whole bunch of books and a whole bunch of paper and went over to my parents' house in East Washington for like the whole weekend by myself and wrote this paper.
Oh my gosh.
I have no idea what it was like. It was probably horrible. But anyway, so then you're supposed to... Then Ron had, his secretary, Pat Brown, type it up for me, because I didn't type. Mm-hmm. Still don't type. She typed it up for me, and I had footnotes and all that crap, you know. And then I passed it in, and then you're supposed to go before two or three of the professors, and they ask you questions. It's like, you know, this is for a BA, right?
Wow.
So I passed it in, and they gave me a time that I was supposed to go answer the questions about it. And nobody ever showed up. I sat in the office waiting for these people to come, and they never came. And I thought to myself, either it's so shitty a paper that they're embarrassed and they don't, you know, and I'm a faculty wife and they don't want to embarrass me, so they're just going to regret it, or they just blew it off and gave it to me anyway.
Right.
I mean, I have no idea, not a clue what happened with that. I passed and I graduated.
I would think it was
that's all I cared
the
about.
Latter. That they're like...
I don't know.
But, jeez.
Because I really don't know. I asked to this day, don't know. I don't know, and I don't even know whether I had another copy of the paper or not, but it was just one of those things. I was thinking about that the other day. I said,
the paper's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah.
And I graduated. That's all I cared about.
How funny would we get a hold of that then?
Yeah. It probably didn't make sense. I don't know. Maybe it did. I mean,
I bet it did.
It probably did.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I wasn't, you know, I was an okay student, but.
And then you taught kindergarten and then first grade for 34 years.
Yeah.
Oy.
Part of my career for a few years, I taught kindergarten in the morning and did special ed in the afternoon. Not that I had any credentials in special ed, but I worked with the special ed people and worked individually with kids with problems. This was early on. And that was really cool.
Mm.
That was really neat. I enjoyed that.
That's cool.
Yeah. And
I remember visiting you and you're doing, I think, you're like testing kids. The thing I remember is you had like a wall here and you'd have a board and you'd put the board like 2 feet away from the wall and say, you know, walk between these things. And they'd walk between. And the kids would be kind of getting back in line to walk between. Mm-hmm. Between. You'd keep making it closer and closer,
mm-hmm.
and the I remember, I don't know if I screwed it up, because I don't know how old I was. I must have been 7 or ish. Mm-hmm. But I remember, so I have such a weird memory. I remember saying, you don't necessarily have to walk straight through, you could turn to the side. And I remember you going, shh, they're supposed to think of that on their own.
That was OT.
And that was,
I worked with kids with spatial problems and body and space and motor planning and all that. Mm-hmm. That's the whole OT thing.
Okay.
Then I,
occupational therapy. Mm-hmm. Is that what that stands for? What's OT?
Occupational therapy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in occupational therapy in hospitals is much different. They teach you how to pick things up with grabbers and put your clothes on when you can't, you know. But this is a lot of sensory stuff, and Will had to go through a lot of that. Mm-hmm. We started with him when he was 4, getting somebody came to the house and did stuff with him. You know, where you are in relationship to things, and like I say, motor planning, all your sensory stuff. Anyway, I did that with kids, and I did reading with them, you know, puzzles, you know, visual stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever the teacher wanted me to do, take kids out of class and do that in the afternoon, because there was a need for that, and there weren't probably enough kids in the kindergarten, you know, in that year in the kindergarten, or I don't know, I think I did it for a couple of years. And so they just kind of put me where they needed me, mm-hmm. which was really neat. And I started out at Harold Martin in Hopkinton Village, because they built the kindergarten rooms onto the two schools, one at Maple Street, one at Harold Martin, and Harold Martin was K through 6, and so was Maple Street K through 6 when I first started, and that's when they voted in the kindergarten into the town to pay for it and all that. So I started out at Harold Martin, and then I went up to Maple Street School and was there for a while. This was kindergarten, and then that's when I did the special ed stuff up there too. I mean, there were double session kindergartens, except a couple of years that they didn't have enough kids, so that I could do that in the afternoon. And I remember one year they didn't have any busing at noon. I remember driving kids home.
Oh my gosh.
Well, they had busing, but a couple of kids, three or four kids lived way out in one area where the bus didn't go or something, I don't know. So I did that for a while, and they had to...
I used to drive kids too, remember?
Oh, yeah.
The special ed kids.
Yeah. The short bus.
your dad's station wagon.
yeah, well, that's what I did. That's right.
Wow.
But
I did it too.
Yeah. Yep.
Visited both of those schools. There's one that's close to where your house is.
That's the Maple Street School.
Maple Street. And
the
other one was
in Hopkinton Village. Well, that's where I worked most of the time. That's where I ended up, because they voted to make Maple Street 3 through 6, and then Harold Martin was not 4 through 6, and Harold Martin was K through 3. Which made a lot more sense, you know, put all the kids in one place.
But
the snooty Hopkinton Village people wanted their own little school, but that didn't work out for them.
That's funny. That was the one I visited. You had a kid in class that was like a super genius, and he could type things on a typewriter or something in kindergarten. And I came to visit you.
Oh my gosh, that's Kevin.
The thing that I remember the most was, and I was, you know, just a little bit older than them, but if they're 5, I'm 7 or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not, but they were aghast that you had children.
Oh yeah.
That you didn't just like live in the school. I just thought that was so cute that their existence was, they show up and you're here, and then they leave. and they show up and you're here. They just figure you
live
at this school, and they're like, they just were boggled, like, what? You have
when they
you
ever see me in the store, they can't even speak. It's like,
like you're a regular person.
That kid Kevin, let me tell you about him, because so he was like Ben Hazen's age, so he's 50 by now. Okay, so Kevin, I see his dad all the time. Those people were wonderful people. I mean, they have two daughters, and they had Kevin, who was he's autistic, and he's and he's savant. He's a math savant. That's why he could type, and he could. I tell him, I walk in there and say, "Oh, you're gonna put the date on the," and he put the date up there, and you could ask him, questions like, "Rain Man," you know?
Right.
Okay. Anyway, Kevin. So I see his dad all the time, and his dad is this sweet, sweet man, and they adopted children, and they took in foster kids, foster babies, until they could find. They did a lot of neat stuff like that.
Wow.
So. So, and Larry, he must be my age, I bet. Anyway, but then they hook in grandchildren because their daughter was, whatever.
Mm.
So, he tells me about Kevin because I always ask about Kevin because he was so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a crazy kid. He married a Down syndrome woman.
Oh, wow.
You know, talk about whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, she's high end, I guess. But you know, and Pat Larry said it's the best marriage ever.
It's so cool.
They are making it. They made having a great time. She's very social, and of course he isn't. He's very social, but he says she invites all her friends over, and he cooks dinner for everybody. She says, can you imagine Kevin cooking dinner for all these people? I mean, he's an actuary or some high-end math job or something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Larry was, I think, at life insurance. He worked in numbers, too. But I just thought that was so interesting. He married a Down syndrome woman. But when you think about it, I mean, his brilliance and autism wouldn't faze her.
Right.
And her lack of intellectual whatever wouldn't faze him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's just a nice person that's going to love him and take, you know what I mean? It's
right.
Like,
yeah, they're both very safe and.
Yeah. I just thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
So that's it's funny. Well, once you meet Kevin, you don't forget him, that's for sure. But
yeah.
He was very, and he'd scream. He was, he would just out of the blue start screaming if something bothered him. And he was But anyway, we didn't know about autism back then. We didn't know what was going on with him. I had several kids like that before they really understood and labeled it and all that stuff. You know, I had other kids that were like that, and then they began labeling and giving them more help when they needed it at an early age.
I'm sure they're still figuring that out to some extent.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's because they're all different. You know, that's a hard thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had one that was really nonverbal. She's verbal now. She's graduated high school now, but she just repeats lots of times. And my hairdresser's kid is autistic, too. And he's 22 now. He has a person that he hangs out with, and she does special things. I think the state helps compensate for that, but I'm not sure. Anyway, they're all just, like I say, they're so different. You can't really put them in any kind of category, or you know, you say, well, he's nonverbal, but yet he does this, and you know, Costica will, I think, I'm trying to think, maybe has the intellect of a third grader, maybe a little bit. I mean, he writes and reads a little bit, but he's just so emotionally, he's a Romanian kid, He was brought up in an orphanage for 2 years, left alone. Yeah, he's really bad. He's beautiful, too. He's gorgeous. He's now, of course, 22. He's got a facial hair and all nine yards, but he's... Anyway, going off the subject. Gosh, wow.
Cool.
Topped your ear off.
That's awesome, though. Well, the... everything came out.
Next time I'll tell you about dancing school. In my piano lessons.
Yes.
Well, that was a joke. You're such a musician. Not like that at all. Got that from your dad.